So one of the main problems in regulating social media is that we have, of course, illegal content on those platforms, and there is a public interest in that the law is observed on these platforms as well. So, but in the attempt to do that, states sometimes enforce regulation, which creates incentives for the platforms to, in doubt, just to remove.
That is Professor Dr. Wolfgang Schultz, Research Director at the Humboldt Institute. Since 1997, he has been a lecturer at the law faculty of the University of Hamburg, as Herr Schultz has quite an interesting background.
At the beginning of my studies, I was not sure whether I choose law or mathematics, and so I studied both in parallel.
Since July 2001, Professor Schultz also has been a member of the directorate of the Hans Bredow Institute. The focus of his work has been on issues regarding the regulation of media content on the internet, and in that capacity, he has also been advising the European Council. Wolfgang Schultz and I had an interesting conversation on the difficulties of governing content on a European scale, and how, for example, governments can help businesses and corporations to regulate themselves. Here is our conversation. But maybe to start the whole thing off, you could maybe very briefly introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your position that you have here at The Hague.
So my name is Wolfgang Schultz. I'm a lawyer by education, but I also study journalism. So I'm a little bit of an interdisciplinary being and do a lot of interdisciplinary work as well. I'm one of the research directors of the Humboldt Institute for Internet and Society. And that means that I'm responsible for drafting the strategies, working with the postdocs we have on our research programs and things like that.
You divide your time between several institutes and several functions. The Hague is not the only place you visit. You also have an appointment at the Bredow Institute in Hamburg.
That's correct. I've been working with the Bredow Institute for a couple of years, quite a while, and I have a joint professorship there, and that is a cooperation between the Bredow Institute and the law faculty of the University of Hamburg. So I teach in Hamburg, and I do a lot of research in Hamburg as well, but the things that especially are dedicated to issues of internet and society, that's something I do here at the Humboldt Institute in Berlin.
Could you maybe briefly talk a little bit about some of the research topics that you do here? I mean, there's a broad range of different things you do. Could you maybe briefly explain or touch upon some of these research projects?
So one of the things we do research on here is revolving around artificial intelligence, and it's actually a cooperation project between the Bredow Institute in Hamburg and the Humboldt Institute here in Berlin, and that is researching the specifics of automated decision making, or decision making that is supported by algorithmic systems. And we are especially interested in better understanding the interaction between machines and human beings in this process, and to take an example to better understand what it needs for a human being in the loop to make a meaningful decision when you have also algorithmic systems. Very often we say as soon as there is a human being in the loop, everything is okay. But we would argue, no, it's not okay. It very much depends on the resources, the knowledge, the skills, and so on, liability frameworks for this a person to make a difference. So that's one of the things we are interested in when it comes to algorithms, and specifically learning algorithms, and specifically those that have something to do with what people now call and have been calling for a while artificial intelligence.
Now, you have, as you already stated, a background in law and journalism, also, I believe, in mathematics. Maybe you could explain a little bit about how things like law and journalism have an influence on your position here at a research institute for internet and society.
So that's I think an extremely interesting question. Maybe answer in two parts. One is since you mentioned the mathematic thing, at the beginning of my studies, I was not sure whether I choose law or mathematics, and so I studied both in parallel, and later on decided to take the path in legal studies. But nevertheless, it influenced my thinking, and when we now work with people from computer science, then it's extremely helpful to have this background. And we did a paper, for example, about a very strange thing called type theory, and I imagined that that was something I was working on when I was a student, and so I could resonate with the things that the computer science people did. But the second part is maybe more influential from my day-to-day work. And the journalism study I did influences my thinking in two ways. One is that very often we have this template of media, editorial media, with which we operate when we think about public communication, and we tend, many people tend in policy making to have this old thinking of traditional media and want to compare everything, every new development we have with what the traditional media did. And so that I have a background in researching journalistic content and how it is produced is extremely helpful. And the second thing is that I have learned to do some empirical work as well, which is not normal for a lawyer. As a lawyer, you normally work with texts and you do not read statistics and know what's behind that. And that background is extremely helpful for me when it comes to understanding and to some extent taking part in empirical research.
Now, you do a great variety of different research or help advise other research projects. We're not going to talk about all of them, but I'd like to talk or focus on specifically, well, maybe one or two subject matters. Maybe to briefly introduce those, you are also a member of the Committee of Experts on Internet Intermediaries of the European Council. Could you maybe very briefly explain what your role is there and what kind of advice do you provide there?
So actually, this committee you are referring to has already delivered the main deliverables. So I'm working still with the Council of Europe, but on a new project on AI and human rights. So artificial intelligence, again, is a subject. But this subcommittee you're referring to was an extremely interesting work that we did, and the task was to give advice to the member states of the Council of Europe, which you should not confuse with the European Union. So more countries there involved, Russia and Turkey, for example, to take some problematic examples in terms of human rights, or challenging at least. And for those member states, the group designed guidelines how they should treat intermediaries in a human rights friendly and human rights respecting way. And that is not an easy task, because one thing is to understand what intermediaries actually are. So that is a term that in public communication and also in academic discourses has become very popular. And normally we refer to intermediaries when we want to address services that have a kind of structural function for the way we communicate in a society, but are not traditional media that work editorial like traditional media do. And the term has become a kind of umbrella concept for different services like social media platforms. Facebook is an example, but also search engines like Google or microblogging services like Twitter. So you have a bunch of different services, but they all have in common that they are not working as traditional media work, but on the other hand, they are not just a technical tool in the hand of the user. They have a structural function for communication. And so many states in Europe and in other parts of the world struggle with the task to find an adequate regulatory framework for those services. And we wanted to give some guidance from a human rights point of view.
Now, you are describing your role as an advisory role on a committee advising the European Council. Could you maybe describe a little bit some of the problems you bounce into when you have to take into consideration all of these different nations that have all different understandings about human rights? Maybe you can talk a little bit about how that eventually translates into sensible governance of the Internet.
So the advantage of the Council of Europe, and that's why I like to work with them, even though the institution as such is not extremely powerful. They do not have so many really binding rules. They can produce helpful things without really regulating themselves, but just give guidance. But the thing that makes it extremely valuable, in my view, is that with the European Convention on Human Rights, we have a accepted traditional way of describing human rights. And a kind of minimum standard that all the countries with a different cultural background adhere to. And they are bound by the convention and they have to accept the rulings of the European Court on Human Rights. And this court actually relies on our work when it comes to this new phenomenon. So that's one of the ideas that you have this commission's coming up with ideas. And when the court has a case on that, that they can refer to these recommendations. So I think the main challenge in this case is not that the traditions of the states and the cultural context is so different. That is an issue. The challenges here were more that these intermediaries have completely different functions, which makes it hard to say what we normally do in law. When you fall into this category, you are this category of media service provider, for example, then you have these kind of privileges, access to information privileges or things like that, and you have this set of obligations. But that is only possible when you have a very clear link between a function and this function that the service fulfills for society and the individual and these legal realms. With intermediary services, you don't have that anymore. So take Facebook, for example. Facebook is a kind of hybrid. It helps you to communicate with your friends, and that's one function. It helps you to some extent manage your personality, to create a persona for the internet, how you want to be perceived, how you want people to interact with you. But also many people get their information about the society from the newsfeed of Facebook, for example. And that's a mixture of personal communication and mass media content, for example. So even with this one intermediary, social media platforms of the Facebook style, we have a bundle of functions. And that is a challenge. And one of the recommendations we gave to the member states is maybe do not try to find a one-size-fits-all solution for regulating intermediaries, but look into specific functions and then find a human rights-respecting way to deal with those different functions. And that can mean that Facebook, for example, does not fall under one regime, but many in a country.
Could you maybe talk a little bit about some specific cases you looked at while you were doing work for the committee? Is there any specific moments that stand out that you studied, maybe some specific violations of human rights that you said, oh, that could be useful?
So one thing we discussed a lot was how can we avoid that states create legal systems that lead to overblocking? So one of the main problems in regulating social media is that we have, of course, illegal content on those platforms, and there is a public interest that the law is observed on these platforms as well. So as we know now, it's not an legal vacuum online. The same rules apply when you address someone online, libel, for example, is the same thing as when you address them in a traditional media or on the street or whatever. So there's no special exemption for this kind of thing online. People start to learn that, but it's still sometimes that people communicate as if there was no law protecting the personal rights or the honor of another person. But in the attempt to do that, states sometimes enforce regulation, which creates incentives for the platforms to, in doubt, just to remove. And that, of course, is not a good thing for freedom of communication, because then just when someone complains, then Facebook or another social media service provider will say, okay, we delete and that's it. And that might mean for countries that some voices are not to be heard anymore. That might not be such a great problem in countries where you have other means of communication. But in some countries where the opposition, for example, has only the chance to use this kind of service to get their message across, because the media is very much streamlined by the government, then that can create huge problems. And so what we advised the member states is to find a way that, for example, you do not use time constraints and say you have to delete that in 10 hours or something, which leads to this, that in rational provider would then say, I can't check that in 10 hours, and so I delete because I want to comply. That is a concrete example, and we had a lot of debates about the so-called Network Enforcement Act, and in German it's Netzwerkdurchsetzungsgesetz, which is a word that anybody can pronounce in German in Asia that is working in the internet field. That is a kind of export champion product of Germany. And there many people criticize, and I'm among them, that that is designed in a way that is incentivizing removing legal content. So that's one thing we've discussed a lot. How can we guide member states in making this kind of regulatory frameworks that are not likely to create this overblocking?
Of course, the European Council, the Council of Europe, is already a bigger conglomerate of all these different nations. But of course, it's not the entire world. And that's also very important to realize. Whereas, of course, the internet goes a bit broader than that. Is the Council of Europe at the moment sort of at the forefront of discussing these kind of regulations? Do you as a committee, have you looked at other places in the world where they are already a bit further, or are they lacking behind? What kind of a position does the Council of Europe at this moment takes on the governance of the internet?
I would say that the Council of Europe is, when it comes to a human rights-centered view on intermediaries, very much in the forefront of the development. So things like that are discussed in other parts of the world as well. But many people are actually looking to Europe to get some ideas how to regulate in a balanced matter, in a balanced way. There are some other countries where you have debates like that. There is the UNESCO and the UN in general, so the Special Rapporteur for Freedom of Expression has drafted some ideas on human rights-friendly intermediary regulation as well, but that is very much in line with what we have designed, and I would say that we are a little more detailed in what we suggest. And one thing that took a lot of work in the Council of Europe committee was to address the industry. One thing is to give guidance to states, but the Council of Europe committees now give some guidance and some ideas how to self-regulate to industry members as well. Since what the companies do is important for how we communicate in our societies. And so the internal law, the terms of service, the community guidelines, they have a structuring effect. And one traditional way would say, if there is something problematic about that, then the states should regulate that. But that comes with a lot of additional challenges. One challenge is that the jurisdiction conflicts that might come there, because one country regulates it this way, the other country the other way. And so what responsibilities these companies have under a human rights regime become more and more important, because that's something that they can do and they should do. And especially in countries where you cannot rely on the government to be the guardian of human rights, then the responsibility for the companies is even bigger than in other countries. So this element is something that we discuss really deeply when it comes to human rights, but also constitutional lawyers are discussing what is the right way to treat the intermediaries there. Some say that they are really kind of hybrids between the state and the society, so that to some extent they should be treated like states, and in some respect they are just private companies and they have to be dealt with this way. So that indicates how significant this development is and how challenging it is for discussions about human rights and fundamental rights under national constitutions.
That was Professor Dr. Wolfgang Schulz. If you want to know more about his research, click on the links in the show notes. And as always, for more information on the Alexander von Humboldt Institute for Internet and Society, visit hiig.de. Ladies and gentlemen, if you learned something today, if you are 20 minutes wiser about the internet, then don't forget to leave us a comment or rating on iTunes. This was Exploring Digital Spheres. Catch you on the flip side.